Football Weekly is on the air.
Third and goal at the one. Manning's going to throw. Throws it left to the end zone. Touchdown, Giants. Jake Ballard. And with 15 seconds to go, the Giants are back in front, 23-20.
Jones has it at 35. It's a high kick. Indeed, Peterson backing up. And he fields it at his 2. He runs right to the 5. Comes up field to the 10. He's got the 20. Breaks the tackle. 25, 30. Peterson, 35, 40. He's still going. Rookie in midfield. Peterson, 40. Peterson, 20. Peterson wins. Cardinals in overtime. Third touchdown on a punt return by Patrick Peterson.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, rivalry renewed in Pittsburgh, and the Giants and Pats in Foxborough.
Is it rebuilding time in Indianapolis? What's up with the Chargers' offensive line, and are the Vikings headed west?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. The way we hear it features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. We begin this week with associate editor Dan Parr. Down in Tampa Bay, a couple of years ago, they tried to make a push to get Albert Haynesworth in a trade. They were able to claim him this week after the Patriots cut the mercurial defensive tackle. Gerald McCoy, their number one draft choice, went down for a second season in a row. The defensive tackle with a season-ending biceps tear. Now they get Haynesworth. Tell us about this situation, Dan, and where does he fit in?
Well, Wayne, I don't think Albert Haynesworth is joining the Bucs if McCoy doesn't have that injury, and GM Mark Dominic has made that pretty clear. They were desperate for help at the position. They really had very little depth there. Gerald McCoy, the third overall pick a couple years ago, is a guy they rely heavily upon, even though he hasn't quite lived up to expectations quite yet. But Haynesworth is a guy who I think that we don't know exactly if he's going to be active this week or not against the Texans, but Bucs have lost 2 games in a row. They've struggled against the run. They're going to take a chance on Haynesworth. They're only on the hook for the $706,000 left on his contract for this season, so they look at it as a risk worth taking at this point.
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes it interesting, Dan, is that they'll put him at the under tackle, which he played so successfully in Tennessee, which he was not able to play at Washington in Jim Haslett's scheme, or in the 3-4 where they tried to make him a 5 technique end in New England. But I'm really intrigued by the relationship or what it's going to be between him and Raheem Morris, because one of the things about this team with the youngest coach in the NFL is they've had the youngest roster in the NFL, and this is going to be a challenge that Morris has not really faced yet.
And he's done, you know, over the past couple of years a pretty good job of managing that young talent. 10 wins last season, 4-4 at this point. The question is, how does he handle a guy that's very different from that young group? Now, there are good veteran leaders in that locker room between Rondae Barber, Jeff Fain, Kellen Winslow does a good job of that as well. And Josh Freeman, for being a young guy, really has a commanding presence and commands a lot of respect within the locker room. So I think some people who are predicting that, you know, Haynesworth will become a cancer, some kind of toxic presence in there. I think maybe some of that's overblown, but it is going to be a challenge for Raheem Morris and also defensive line coach Keith Millard, who's a, you know, a 2-time All-Pro defensive tackle in his career. He's a guy who they are expecting to light a fire under Haynesworth. Motivation's been a problem for him. $100 million contract couldn't get him going. Bill Belichick couldn't get him going. Let's see if Raheem Morris has any better luck.
Well, and you know, the real problem for Tampa Bay has been they're getting trashed on the ground. There's no question about that. Bears got them for 177 rushing yards, 195 by the Saints last week. But their pass defense, 28th in the NFL now, and their sack rate, 31st in the NFL, just 12 sacks all so far this season. Adrian Claiborne has a fourth of those sacks, the defensive end. So you've got some people out there on the island in that secondary, and they're not making interceptions either. They're not making plays. They're only 8 interceptions so far this season after intercepting 19 a year ago. The play of Aqib Talib has come under question this season, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, Aqib Talib's been under question for most of his career for off-field problems, and really, the least of the concerns for much of the time were on the field, and this year he's dropped a couple would-be interceptions. He's made at least one really stupid mistake with a penalty against the Bears that hurt the team in that Week 7 loss. But still, the team looks at him as one of their best playmakers on that side of the ball. He's going to cover the number one wide receiver on the opposing team if that team happens to have one. When the Bucs pay man coverage, and they've been doing a lot more of that this season.
Dan, thank you. We're going to ask you to hand the mic off to Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, all kinds of things going on in Indianapolis, where Indianapolis Star columnist Bob Kravitz wrote a scathing indictment in a column of Chris Polian, Bill Polian's son, who is now the GM of the football team. And Polian responded by calling the media rats who lie and said that the team's job is to throw rats in the sewer. And now owner Jim Irsay has answered on Twitter, where he seems to do most of his talking, and told Bill Polian to learn how to deal with the media a little bit better. This is turmoil. This cannot be a good situation for the football team or, quite frankly, for the Polian family.
Absolutely not. What's been ugly football on the field all season has certainly trickled on into the front office and what's going on with the media right now. And from what we're hearing, there's a lot of truth in what Kravitz wrote. Chris Polian has been, of course, a very polarizing figure as he's taken on more responsibility over the years. He was the driving force behind the removal of some long-tenured and highly respected employees in that organization, you know, such as Howard Mudd and a Tom Moore and a lot of the long-term personnel guys that have been taken out in the past few years. So they got a very ugly situation on their hand. Recently, owner Jim Irsay has thrown his support behind the Polians, but something like this and his most recent tweet kind of saying that Bill Polian needs to do a better job handling the media and really needs to back off of who he called his friend, Bob Kravitz. It's an ugly situation, and it really makes you wonder what might happen after this season.
Meanwhile, down in Jacksonville, things not going well. GM Gene Smith may be in trouble. Last year of his contract. Now, Arthur, he was offered an extension before the season but turned it down?
That's right, and it's a bit of a head-scratcher, particularly now, of course, with his team struggling. But I guess Gene, an old-school guy, said that his scouting department wasn't going to get an extension, the coaching staff wasn't going to get an extension, so he was going to sit and wait, too. And, of course, that's backfired on him. Blaine Gabbert has not looked good at all. The wide receiver position has come under major scrutiny in Gene Smith's ability to find talent there. And obviously there's other issues on that football team. So while we're not hearing that owner Wayne Weaver plans to remove Gene Smith or anything like that, it does have to make you wonder about his decision not to take that money when he had the opportunity, when he is, in fact, in the final year of his deal.
Great stuff, Arthur. Thank you very much. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We continue with the Way We Hear It. Executive editor Dan Arkush joins us, and out of the NFC West, the Rams, 1-7, and their coach Steve Spagnuolo, clearly on the bubble, is he not?
Oh, absolutely, Wayne. They got a big boost with that stunning upset of the Saints two Sundays ago, but then Patrick Peterson took the starch out of everything this past week. With that punt return that burned them against the Cardinals. And they really need to win at least two games in November, I think, for Spags to have a chance, guys.
Dan, is Stan Kroenke about the most reclusive, I don't want to say reclusive, but I mean, you can't get anything out of this guy. You can't really get a sense of what he's thinking about his football team.
Yeah, that's his MO, Hub. You know, I talk to our guys in St. Louis on a regular basis, and he's a real mystery man. So it's really hard to tell exactly what he has on his mind, but you know he can't be happy with the way things have gone.
Well, wouldn't that suggest that Billy Devaney could be in trouble too?
Absolutely. I think that both Devaney and Spagnuolo are kind of attached at the hip right now, and you got to look at the moves that they've made, both in the draft and free agency, and it's mixed reviews at best.
Yeah, they had kind of loaded up to go after that division title, figuring that it was pretty well wide open. Seattle won it with a losing record a year ago. They made some moves in the offseason, didn't they, Dan? And they just haven't quite panned out. I know the injury to the quarterback is hurt as well.
Yeah, Sam Bradford just has not been as good as he was last year. There have been extenuating circumstances, lots of injuries, but people like Jason Smith not panning out. They just made another big move. The starting center, Jason Brown, apparently has been benched, so there are scapegoats now that are starting to kind of come into play.
Let's welcome in Executive Editor Eric Edholm. Down in Dallas, hot topic this week about whether Jason Garrett can handle being a head coach and the offensive play caller. No less an authority than Fox's Jimmy Johnson, the former Cowboys coach. Garrett's former head coach in Dallas has said he doesn't think the coach should do both. Can you fill us in on that, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy was what Jerry Jones calls a walk-around coach, you know, sort of the same with Bill Parcells. You know, he kind of would, you know, spend time with the linebackers, then go to the offense, work with the line, you know, and sort of divvy up his time. And Jerry Jones, I guess the anti-Stan Kroenke in that he's everywhere, doesn't think that's the right way to go about it. He preferred Wade Phillips to call things on defense. He wants Jason Garrett to be the play caller. And yet it is interesting that he has kind of questioned some of Garrett's moves in the past, including that New England game, the game they lost right at the end.
And you have to love Jerry Jones believing that he's more of an authority on this subject than Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson. But what I really found intriguing, Eric, was another part of his quote where he said Joe Gibbs, and he said, my friend Joe Gibbs, which I think was a way of saying Jimmy Johnson isn't my friend, because we all know how that ended.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, he talked about Gibbs and having conversations with him, and Gibbs was of the belief that, you know, you should be able to, you know, sort of be in charge of one thing, and I think that was the belief there. So, you know, I don't know if he's sending a message up to Jimmy's way, but we know they've had their interests in the past that have been a little different.
Another one of your teams, Eric, the Philadelphia Eagles, the dream team, and I guess the nightmare continues. Two big issues. One, is this team tough enough? And two, where is DeSean Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lack of toughness comes from the fact, Hub, I mean, Wayne and Hub both, is the fact that you look at this past game, this loss to the Bears. This is the fourth time this season they've led going into the fourth quarter and blown the lead and lost those games. So that's a big concern. Is it mental toughness? Is it, you know, physical stamina? Is it just not finishing plays? That's one issue that's come up. And Michael Vick was a little bit touchy about the subject this week. And he talked more about, you know, this is not a soft team. This is something that we just got to figure out in terms of execution. And the other factor, like you mentioned with Jackson, you know, he's kind of disappeared. And I know teams are kind of scheming against him, keeping their safeties deep, but at some point you've got to get the ball in his hands as a game breaker.
You know, the Eagles did have a lead to blow in the third quarter, but that was courtesy of the two Matt Forte fumbles. The reality is they were never in this game. I couldn't believe how poorly the multi-million dollar cornerback trio played. And when are people finally going to acknowledge that Mike Vick is simply not a complete NFL quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously some things working against him this year, but he's got the, you know, one of the best running backs in the game, LeSean McCoy, in terms of his production this year. It's been outstanding. The line has kind of gotten better around him a little bit, but, you know, there are holes in his game, and I think he's produced at an uneven level this year, and, you know, getting the ball into Jackson's hands is only one part of that, but there are other parts that are lacking too.
Senior editor Eric Edholm on the Philadelphia Eagles. Stay tuned. The games are up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, got a full slate. The Tennessee Titans are coming in off a 24-17 loss to Cincinnati, and they're in Carolina where the Panthers are coming off a bye week. Carolina has been in almost every game this season. Six of their contests decided by 7 points or less. Rookie quarterback Cam Newton has been better than anyone could have reasonably expected in his first season in the league. He's coming off a 290-yard, three-touchdown, no-interception performance against the Vikings in Week 8. Now, a disturbing second half saw the Titans go scoreless and blow a 10-point lead in their loss to Cincinnati. Yet, I tell you what, overall this season, quarterback Matt Hasselbeck, the veteran they picked up to kind of hold the fort for a while, he's played well. His passer rating of 90 would be the third highest of his career if the season ended today. And, of course, it doesn't. On the flip side, they paid the man in Nashville. They paid the man, the running back, Chris Johnson. And he's been awful, averaging barely 3 yards a carry, leading the league's worst rushing attack at 70 yards a game. Elsewhere, St. Louis at Cleveland, two struggling teams getting together on the shores of Lake Erie in Cleveland as the 3-5 Browns host the 1-7 Rams. Rams have been on a roller coaster last couple of weeks, huge upset in New Orleans 1 week, then a draining overtime loss at Arizona last week. The Browns got trampled by the Houston Texans' rushing attack, giving up 261 rushing yards, and it won't get much easier. Steven Jackson, one of the top pure rushers in the NFC, leads the Rams attack. Jackson racked up 130 yards on 29 carries at Arizona last week. The Browns are sixth-ranked defense overall, but they're 30th defending the run, yielding 144 yards rushing a game. And I think you know where the Rams' approach will be in this one. Well, at least it should be
on the ground. Hub?
When Jacksonville is at Indianapolis in the first of what is going to be a series of games in the Suck for Luck playoffs, and the bottom line is Jacksonville just took Blaine Gabbert, but they'd still love to have that pick and be able to trade it or make some decisions, and we know that Indianapolis, even with Peyton Manning, would be all over Andrew Luck if they could get him. Now, which team is worse? Clearly, the Colts. They've been god-awful. They've been outscored 120-24 in their last three games. They appear to have quit at times, and now you've got the front office feuding with the media and possibly in trouble with ownership. And Jacksonville, as we talked about in the way we hear it, is the GM solid? We know Jack Del Rio is on the bubble. How do these players even show up and play? Well, they're going to have to, and we'll see which team's roster has more pride in this one. Also, Denver at Kansas City, and I'm going to make this analysis pretty simple. For the Denver Broncos, they've retooled the offense. They're basically now running the Florida spread for Tim Tebow. He's doing everything out of the shotgun. They're playing their running game out of the shotgun. It's made them win two games that he started against inferior competition, but the bottom line is that you're not developing this football team. Nobody around him is getting better because you're not playing an NFL offense. For the Kansas City Chiefs, this is an absolute must-win. Why, you ask? Because after Denver, they go to New England. They get Pittsburgh at home. They're at Chicago, at the Jets, and then they get Green Bay at home before they finish with Oakland and Denver. The Chiefs have to win this game if they have any hope of contending in the AFC West.
Well, Hub, I've got another candidate in your Suck for Luck Derby, the Miami Dolphins. The 3-5 Washington Redskins head to Miami where they take on the 1-7 Dolphins. Now, last week, Miami went to Kansas City and snapped the Chiefs' four-game winning streak with a 31-3 shocker. The Dolphins are 10-5 under Coach Tony Sparano in November, but they are 1-12 over their last 13 home games dating back to Week 16 of the 2009 campaign. Amazing. The Redskins have lost four in a row after a 19-11 setback to the 49ers. The offense has been debilitated by injuries and inconsistent quarterback play. The Skins are 21st overall offensively, 27th in scoring. John Beck will start at quarterback against the team that drafted him in the second round in 2007, but Beck has never won in seven career starts. Miami not bad defensively, ranking 10th in the league in scoring defense, but the Fish are tied for last in turnover differential at -8. One would figure we'll get a low-scoring affair in this one, Hub.
When the Arizona Cardinals visit the Philadelphia Eagles, and for Arizona, they're actually in the Luck Derby, and you wonder if Ken Wisenhunt's job isn't in jeopardy at 2-6. Now, last year's first-round pick, Patrick Peterson, lights out. His third punt return for a touchdown last week to win the game over the Rams is the first time in history a player has had three PR returns for touchdowns in his first eight games. And John Skelton got a start at quarterback for Kevin Cobb. Wasn't that bad, other than giving up two safeties on two straight positions, and so you wonder, will they give him another look? The Cobb experiment hasn't gone all that well. With the Philadelphia Eagles, you talk about desperate. At 3-5, there is no room for error. Best case, they got to be 7-1 down the stretch. This is a game they should win. They have to win. Be interesting to see if they get it done. And finally, we've got the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Seattle Seahawks. What should we make of the fact that Joe Flacco showed up in a huge game and was the difference down the stretch in knocking off the Steelers last week? They're in the driver's seat in the AFC North now. Yeah, tied with the Bengals, but a couple games left with them. They've got the tiebreaker over the Steelers, who they now have a half a game lead on, and they're going to Seattle where the Seahawks have been terrible. Now, is Pete Carroll in trouble? No, he's not. He's still got 3 years left at $7 million a year, and Paul Allen's going to give him a chance to straighten things out. But he and GM John Schneider have made some questionable personnel moves. This team is playing well on defense, awful on offense, which is supposed to be one of Carroll's strengths. They've messed up the quarterback situation, and now they've got a chance to redeem themselves against a contending team at home. Are they good enough to do it? Well, that's why they play the games on Sunday, although I got to tell you, in Seattle, the natives are getting very, very restless.
Stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Well, an interesting battle shapes up in Jerry World as the 5-3 Buffalo Bills meet the homestanding 4-4 Dallas Cowboys. And Hub, I can't help but think, both these teams, are they at crossroads at this stage?
I think the Buffalo Bills definitely are, Wayne. They're tied atop the AFC East, but we saw last week against the Jets that they're not at the caliber of the Patriots and the Jets right now, even though the Patriots are struggling. They got to prove they can go on the road against a decent football team and win, and the defense is going to be challenged here. They'll score some points on Dallas. I think they'll figure that out, but can they handle Tony Romo and DeMarco Murray? And you know, I don't know if Miles Austin, if he's going to be healthy or not, but Dez Bryant can be a difference maker when he wants to be, and of course Jason Witten. So we're going to find out a lot about the Buffalo Bills this weekend. Are they really a playoff team? And the Cowboys at 4-4, you know, they're two behind the Giants. They're in it, but when you watch them play, you just don't have a sense that this is a team that's really in a playoff chase.
Well, Hub, the 102nd meeting of the Vikings and Packers takes place at historic Lambeau Field in Green Bay on Monday night. Now, the Vikings coming in off a bye week, hung on for a victory at Carolina 24-21 the week before their week off. Meanwhile, the Packers survived a shootout in San Diego 45-38 over the San Diego Chargers. These two teams met 3 weeks ago. The Packers emerged with a victory despite the fact that Adrian Peterson had a big game, 175 rushing yards and a touchdown, despite the fact that Jared Allen did his thing, two sacks, two quarterback hits, and seven tackles, and despite the fact that the quarterback, Christian Ponder, the rookie, played pretty well in that ballgame.
Well, and that was his first start, Wayne, and that's what made the biggest puzzle of the season for the Minnesota Vikings to me, is why they were so good against the Packers in that game, because they really haven't been most of the way. As you just pointed out, they've got some real star power on that team. They should be able to play with some of these teams, but they haven't so far. As far as the Green Bay Packers, I'll tell you what the San Diego game pointed out to me. A, I never believed they were going undefeated. With that defense, you can't go undefeated. But what should be a bigger concern to Packers fans, you keep playing defense like that, somebody's going to jump up and bite you in the playoffs. You know, remember, it's single elimination at that point. And it, as otherworldly as Aaron Rodgers is, and as great as that offense is, and as great a job as I think Mike McCarthy is doing, and I think Dom Capers can be brilliant at times, but the way the Packers give up points, they need to get that fixed, Wayne, or somebody are going to upset them in the playoffs before they get to the Super Bowl.
Amen. Men, brother. An AFC North rivalry resumes in the Queen City as the Pittsburgh Steelers visit the Cincinnati Bengals. Jim Colony has the story.
No surprise that there'll be a first-place team on the field Sunday afternoon in Cincinnati when the Steelers play the Bengals, but how about that first-place team being the Bengals, tied with the Ravens at 6-2, a half game ahead of the Steelers. And Cincy coach Marvin Lewis is making like he's unhappy with his team's 6-2 record.
I expected we'd be 8-0, actually, but we're not. So we're not as good as I expected us to be.
And Lewis actually said that with a straight face, so maybe he's not kidding. Plus, Lewis says he had an idea that he might actually have a better group even before the season started.
Started training camp, we were a better football team, talent-wise. We've gone out and proved that and played that way, and I think that's the there's some guys with that haven't had experience playing that are doing good things. There's some guys who have experience playing that are continuing to do good things, and so it's all fitting together pretty well right now.
And after starting off 1-2, the Bengals have reeled off five straight wins. That's one short of the franchise record. But here's the thing. They have yet to play either the Steelers or the Ravens, so now it'll get serious for rookie quarterback Andy Dalton.
I think everybody's excited, and especially this week because it is the Steelers. I think you can kind of just feel it around town. But, you know, it's going to be a fun atmosphere here on Sunday.
But how much fun will Dalton have against the Pittsburgh zone blitz? Since Dick LeBeau came back as defensive coordinator in 2004, rookie quarterbacks are 1-2 against LeBeau's defenses. And maybe one reason is that LeBeau has safety Troy Polamalu roaming not just the secondary, but all over the place.
He's so instinctive and kind of just has a good feel for what's going on. So, you know, you got to find where he is and, you know, not try to force things when, you know, he's coming in to make a play on the ball.
And Dalton may get to know James Harrison as well. He had three sacks last week against the Ravens after sitting out with an orbital bone injury. As for Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, he says he's a Dalton fan. He liked him at TCU and says playing there prepared him for early NFL success. And Roethlisberger says he expects the Cincinnati defense to get after him.
Blitzing. Doing a lot of blitzing, a lot of I don't think they have one or two standout guys. You know, they have 11, 12, 13, 14 guys that just buy in, you know, and young guys with high motors on the outside at the ends, really getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and I think they do it with confusion.
So experience could make the difference. Veteran Steelers cornerback Ike Taylor hopes it does because he says this year's Bengals are legit.
We're not going to see no slouch team, no boys. I think they're leading the division. So here go another tough one.
Taylor and the Steelers are 8-1 in their last nine games at Paul Brown Stadium. In Pittsburgh, I'm Jim Colony for Pro Football Weekly.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. Meanwhile, the Houston Texans are three games above break-even, Hub, for the first time in the history of that franchise. They take their 6-3 record at Tampa Bay, where the young Bucks are struggling 4-4 off losses in London to Chicago and at New Orleans.
Well, and the amazing thing, Wayne, is the Texans have done it without their all-pro wide receiver Andre Johnson for 5 weeks now, and they lost their all-pro defensive end Mario Williams for the season, and they've actually played better as they've moved on and tried to recover from those injuries. They are probably the best team in the AFC right now. Did I just say that? You think about it. You look at where they're at. You look at the way the Patriots are struggling, the way the Chargers are struggling. The Steelers just got knocked off. They're sneaking up on people down in the South. And then you look at the Bucks. We talked about it in the way we hear it. This is a team that has not played well. They've dropped two straight. The Bucks in an absolute must-win situation at home here. And this may be one of the most fascinating games of the week.
Houston, number one defense in the AFC. Stay tuned. Analysis of more top games coming up after these messages. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL this weekend on Pro Football Weekly. A major battle in the NFC South has the New Orleans Saints heading to Atlanta, where the defending division champs await. First place is on the line, Hub, and this should be a good one.
Yeah, this is a tough one to figure, Wayne, because the Saints are actually an underdog. And remember, the Falcons were the number one seed in the NFC last year. They got off to a horrible start, but they've kind of quietly fought their way back to 5-3. They did manhandle the Detroit Lions in Detroit, which is no easy feat, and so I guess the Falcons are for real. The Saints have really struggled defensively. Offensively, they're everything you would expect from them, and yet I get a New Orleans team as an underdog. That has me scratching my head a little bit. We know how good Atlanta is at home. This is a key NFC South showdown. This probably comes down to the tiebreakers at the end of the season, and so an absolute must win for both ball clubs. And the way they're playing, it looks like a coin flip to me.
And the first of two between these two contenders in the last half of the season. Meanwhile, NFC North Division rematch features the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears on the shores of Lake Michigan. Our preview is provided by Lawrence Holmes.
In what could be the best matchup of the weekend, the 6-2 Lions traveled to Soldier Field to take on the 5-3 Bears. Almost a month ago, the Lions embarrassed the Bears with a 24-13 win at Ford Field. Detroit's defense kept constant pressure on Jay Cutler, while their offense had two touchdowns of 70 yards or more. But Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford says he's seen a difference in the Bears' defense since then.
A couple new guys in on the back end. Obviously, Chris Conte and Major Wright playing a little bit more than they did when we played them on Monday night. Other than that, they're just playing really good football. They played good against us except for a couple plays. We hit some big plays, and that was kind of the difference in the game.
Going back to last year when the Bears escaped the opener after a controversial non-catch call on what looked like a Calvin Johnson touchdown, the Bears-Lions series has turned into a bit of a rivalry, according to Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, it's always awesome. Both teams are decent. They obviously struggled there for a few years. And they're better now. They've won a bunch of games this year, and they have a lot of talent on their football team, both sides of the football. They've racked up those first round picks, and they're taking advantage of it. They're really good now on both sides of the football. So I think it's a good rivalry again.
Some players in the Bears locker room believe that the Lions have become a trash talking team and aren't handling their recent success with a lot of class. Lions coach Jim Schwartz rejects that idea. Bears head man Lovie Smith isn't as concerned with the trash talk as he is with trying to fix problem areas that played a major role in the loss at Detroit.
Offensively, from protection to just continuing to be able to run the football, to keep the turnovers down. And on the other side of the ball, we've defensively made changes. We've eliminated a lot of the big plays that really hurt us.
The Bears have won 3 in a row since that game in Detroit. The Lions are coming off the bye week. Buckle up the chin straps because there's a lot of bad blood that's going to be on display on the lakefront in a game that could have major playoff implications. In Chicago, Lawrence Holmes, Pro Football Weekly.
Lawrence, thank you. And I think the fascinating thing about this ball game is the Bears played their worst game of the season in Detroit on Monday night a few weeks ago. The offensive line abysmal. The Bears committed 14 penalties for 104 yards. And the Lions front, which scares everybody, ate up the Bears offensive line. Bears offensive line has gotten better each of the last 3 weeks and played their best game of the season last Monday night in Philadelphia. That's going to be the matchup that decides the outcome of this game.
Hub, we've got another rematch, this one in the AFC East against the New England Patriots and the resurgent New York Jets. Mike Petralia has the story.
For the last decade, the Patriots and Jets have battled tooth and nail atop the AFC East, and this season is no different through the midway point. Both are 5-3, but the striking difference this time around is that the Jets appear to be the team that's getting hot at the right time, while the Patriots are at a crossroads. The Patriots enter the game at MetLife Stadium on Sunday night, having lost two straight for just the third time since 2003. They haven't lost three straight since missing the playoffs entirely in 2002, also the last season they didn't record double-digit wins. And that was also the last time the Jets won the AFC East. The Patriots this week released nose tackle Albert Haynesworth after a highly unproductive and disappointing 3 months in Foxborough. He was picked up by Tampa Bay on Wednesday. Patriots also have key injuries to safety Patrick Chung and linebacker Brandon Spikes, while receiver Wes Welker is battling a sore rib. Tom Brady's play has suddenly come into question, and he needs to respond this week against a team he knows well and vice versa.
I mean, it's the same group of guys doing the same type of scheme. And they're just, I think we played them a bunch of times over the last few years, and we know them probably better than anybody else in the league. So, you know, they kind of do what they do. You know, there's some game plan type elements to each game. I'm sure they'll have some for us this week.
Brady has thrown 10 interceptions already this year, including two last week. He also lost the ball on a fumble. Meanwhile, Jets cornerback Darrelle Revis was called the best in the game this week by his head coach Rex Ryan. And Revis, well, he agreed.
Yeah, I believe so. And not saying it out of cockiness or anything. You know, I'm a humble guy, but I work hard. And, you know, this has been my dream to be the best.
As for the Jets, they have rebounded since their October 9th loss to the Patriots, 30-21 in Foxborough, that left them at 2-3. They have won three straight, including 27-11 last week in Orchard Park, to force a three-way tie with the Bills and Patriots. In New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Thanks very much, Mike. Stay tuned. The headliner is just ahead on Pro Football Weekly. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. East visits West as division leaders, the New York Giants, take on the San Francisco 49ers. We get the story from Bart Pisterna.
The Giants have had enough second-half fades during Coach Tom Coughlin's tenure to make more than a few skeptics feel it's only a matter of time before the other cleat falls on the current NFC East leaders. After all, their two losses came against the Skins and Seahawks. Big Blue has been notorious for playing down to the level of an opponent or two or three. Key injuries have tested their depth beyond reasonable expectations, and now, still unable to count on a Bradshaw or a Knicks, the Giants must embark upon part two of the campaign with vastly improved NFC West leading San Francisco in the leadoff spot. Coach Coughlin gives us the 49ers' arithmetic roll call.
They're number one against the rush. They're number one in the red area. They've done an incredible job of taking the ball away. They have 19 takeaways. They're a plus 12 football team, which is an outstanding stat. Their offensive team has only thrown two interceptions. They rush the ball. They're sixth in the league in rushing.
Led by Frank Gore, sore ankle and all, who has had five straight 100-yard ground games going into a contest versus the 25th-ranked rushing defense in the league. In an NFL world, we are now elite or not elite. That's going to be an interesting matchup. Then again, you can apparently overuse the adjective elite and render it meaningless. Witness Frisco Frosh phenom coach Jim Harbaugh when speaking of his QB, Alex Smith.
He's every bit the elite quarterback, you know, as there is playing in the game right now.
Like right there with the Giants' proven vet Eli Manning, who has been grilled for daring to agree he is among the current NFL elite quarterbacks. No worries, Eli. Niners safety Dante Whitner has props for you.
Elite quarterback, he can make all the throws. He's going to challenge us down the football field. He's going to be able to see some things that we do on the defensive side of the ball and be able to try to check in and out of things that he think can, you know, attack that certain coverage or certain defense.
Will Manning and the Giants have a letdown on the left coast after last week's dramatic win over the Pats? Will the Niners get complacent knowing only a monumental meltdown can keep them out of the playoffs? These answers and more in future editions of the Elite Pro Football Weekly. I'm Bart Pisterna.
Thank you very much, Bart. Should be a great one. Giants visit the Niners in our headliner. Time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our handicapper from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
Chuck, welcome to the program. It is great to have you alongside, as always. And, you know, I think the story of this season, at least in some regards, continues to be some of these huge numbers that we see. You know, the Packers rolling right along. The one place where they struggled and seemed to be in trouble was in Minnesota just a couple weeks ago. And now you got the Vikings coming back to Green Bay and getting almost two touchdowns. It just, the number seems high.
It does, but you look at the Packers, and against the number of the last 14 games, they're 11-3. They did have that struggle, but this is just a team that the public continues to back week in and week out, and in some cases, we can't make the number big enough.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that last week. It actually shrunk to under a touchdown, and then they managed to get over it against San Diego as poorly as they played late on defense. But the other game that just screams at me, the Philadelphia Eagles were as mediocre to poor as any team I've seen all year last Monday night at home against the Bears. Now they're home again this week. I know Arizona's a bad football team, but, boy, 14 is a big number.
Yeah, I think you look at Philly and the way that they played against Dallas. This is the team that most people think will show up this week against a very poor Arizona team. They have a lot of injuries. Beanie Wells isn't 100%. It looks like Kolb won't be there. The public still is in love with this Philly team. And throughout this season, Hub, as we've talked about, they bet the good teams and against the bad teams. And this is one of those cases.
Well, and that's a perfect segue to my next question, because I don't remember a week where I could get the New England Patriots, the New Orleans Saints, and the New York Giants, all as underdogs. They're on the road against other decent teams. But I mean, to me, I kind of stop right there and say, how do you pass up something like that?
You look for value on the board. You critique each game. And if you think the underdog can win, then there's tremendous value getting points. I can't remember the last time the Pats actually lost three games in a row. I know we were talking about two games in a row heading in the last week. They are in that role as an underdog again, and this conceivably could be their third straight loss, which I can't remember in the Brady Belichick era.
One more quick one for you, Chuck. When a team makes what seems to be almost a seismic shift during the season, and I'm talking about the Chicago Bears, the worst offensive line in football for 5-6 weeks. Now, each of the last 3 weeks gotten a little bit better to the point where they dominated last Monday in Philadelphia. How much harder does that make for you to grade this team and put numbers on them?
Well, I think it actually makes it easier. I think we have a better grasp of what Bear team it is coming in every week. You're not worried about those 5 or 6 sacks, the turnovers. They're a very public team. And now they've actually beaten a good team, and that's the Eagles. So I think moving forward, if that trend continues, you're going to see the public jump back on and start backing the Bears. And they're a favorite this week against the Lions in a huge game as these two teams battle for the first wild card spot in the NFC.
All right, Chuck, as always, thank you much. You have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Hub.
Stay tuned. We've got the Publisher's Pen coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, I really do my best to try and avoid being redundant in this segment. You try not to go back over the same subject over and over. And I haven't talked about this in a little while, but I have talked about it before. Like everyone else with a brain and a heart, I absolutely applaud anything that the NFL powers that be can do to protect their players. But anybody who saw the hit by Ryan Clark on Ed Dixon in the Steelers-Ravens game that cost Ryan Clark $40,000 has to know if you can't make that hit, you're not playing football anymore. There was nothing cheap about it. The game is dangerous, so the hit was dangerous. But the bottom line is that's the only way you can play the game. It was a live situation. He had to break up the pass, and he did. And for him to be flagged and fined, a defenseless receiver, wasn't defenseless. He was trying to catch a ball over the middle. It's called football. I just don't understand what they think they're doing at 280 Park Avenue, but they run the risk of ruining the game if they're not careful.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Cardinals, Packers, and Giants radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.